Hello, everybody. It's time for Micro Brew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's a somber occasion, but here we are a few days after the end of the 2024 Brewers season at the hands of the New York Mets. Talking about it, Mets have already played two more games in the NLDS, 1-1 with Philadelphia, a couple thrillers. So good for them. They're very blessed, et cetera, et cetera. The Brewers, of course, their season is over. We're here to discuss it in a little more depth.
The and Brewers are not blessed.
They are
sorry, not blessed. I think that's the first time I've ever cut you off before you've introduced me. But
well, it was important. What is the opposite of blessed? Cursed.
Cursed.
Maybe. Yeah.
Cooked. Fried.
Cooked is good. Washed. Although they haven't even gotten to washed yet. He's Kurt Hoag, by the way, Brewers reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Did I say who I am? I'm J.R. Radcliffe. You know who we are. You've been listening to us. If you're here, you've been suffering through it with us. That's where you know us already. And Kurt, we got to look back. You've had a couple days. You've been able to digest, as they say. What are you thinking, Kurt? Where are you right now? Tell me where your head is at 3 days after
I was ended. I was able to digest a wonderful brisket that I cooked yesterday. that was on my list, top thing on the end of season list is smoke a brisket, except I don't have a smoker. I just have like a regular propane gas grill, so it makes it a little more challenging, but came out great. Wow. Baby, came out great. Come on over, JR.
I assume you have leftovers, right?
It wasn't a huge brisket. It was still like 4 or 5 pounds, so
yeah, I'm in.
Plenty.
I'm in. I'll be there tomorrow. Let's do it Monday night dinner. It sounds great. Lydia has soccer. I'll just swing by after I drop her off.
Good. Well, we have nothing else going on. So
we don't. The season's over. It's off season, baby.
I was able to digest my brisket, but let me tell you, I still haven't digested that the way that ended.
Yeah.
Wow. I don't have any more. I don't have words. This is the podcast where I'm supposed to have words, but you know what? I still don't. Holy smokes. We'll get into it as this goes on for sure. But I don't know if I've ever experienced whiplash from a singular sporting event in the way that I experienced whiplash from that sporting event. Maybe if I was like a Seattle Seahawks fan when they passed it on the goal line in the Super Bowl, fairly similar. But the thing is, the Seahawks didn't have the lead. They still could have been stopped short. Just a remarkable and unspeakable turn of events for the local nine. We'll break it all down here, but yeah, we're 3-4 days post-mortem and it still hasn't sunk. And usually you're kind of able to turn the page at a certain point and like rationalize what happened. I'm still not there in the context of all that has happened to this franchise in the last 6-7 years. Just brutal and in really difficult to make sense of too.
I'll tell you when I've had that whiplash before. It was in 2019 when I was in Washington, D.C. Sure. Covering the wild card game. And I got to say, that one was even faster because if you remember, everyone remembers the ball going under Trent Grisham's glove. What they don't remember, probably, or maybe they do, is that Juan Soto was thrown out on that play. He was caught in a rundown. So the three runs scored, and Juan Soto, I don't know what he was doing. He's probably just celebrating a little too much. He gets thrown out. The inning ends on that play. That is the last batter of the inning. So then the Brewers immediately transition into the top of the ninth. Washington's going crazy, and three outs come very quickly. And that's it. Like, it was jaw-dropping. This actually wasn't even quite that, because you still had the rest of that Mets inning after Pete Alonso's home run. They score another run. Then the Brewers get a leadoff man on, like
leadoff hit
a little bit of run. Yeah. By Sal Frelick. You figure if Bryce Terang can just sort of not hit into a double play, which is unlike him, you know, like you have to hit the ball kind of right at a guy, which he did, of course,
and hard
inning ending double play. But you know, then Jackson Chourio gets one last chance. I mean, it feels like even then you're like, hey, they still have something here. Obviously about as dispiriting as it gets. And, you know, I asked Todd this, and I have a feeling you might have a different answer. I'm not sure. What is the glue that holds all of these postseason misfortunes together? Because if you look at this game three, I really think as time goes on, game one will be seen as the disaster class here, because that is a game that they absolutely blue. You know, it was how they played right. that cost them
cover first base.
Right, exactly. Game three, and you could certainly argue they would lose game one anyway, because all those hitters that hit have to hit, you know, like you could argue that. But game three, yes, they had it in their hands. They were two outs away, but you had your best player. The plan worked to a T. Jake Bowers, you know, the pinch hitter for Breece Hoskins. Of course, he homers. So you get a homer from an unlikely source, very unlikely, Sal Frelick. We're going to talk about that in a second. But you got it to Devin Williams. Everything, even Freddy Peralta, like unconventional, you got to the place you wanted to get, and it still didn't work. So even though it was a huge gut punch, I mean, the Mets just won it. Like, they just took it from them. Is there a connective glue between what we saw in 2019 and I guess 2020, if we want to talk about 2020, 2021, 2023, these heartbreaks in the first round, different players, different manager, different general manager. Like, what is it? What connects them?
This, and I'll speak to the fan side of things here coming up. But this, as a reporter, is what's so challenging about making sense of this run by the Brewers. I mean, just a series of cataclysmic events from this franchise, with playoff games and playoff series on the lines. Game two against the Mets is the exception there, which is, I'll get to that with the fans part later. But it's really difficult to tie this together with a common thread, other than the literal threads that they're wearing that say Brewers on the front and are gold and blue. It's
even those players. Changed, Kurt. Even those are different from what they were in 2019. And
it's different players. It's, they had a new manager this year. Like, as we talked about, this team, if there was going to be a run, it was just going to be the vibes run. This was the vibes team. Just a plucky underdog, like, totally different style and different, you know, feel around this team than years past. And you know what? New players come in, and guess what? It's the same dang thing. Like, Yoel Piam's not covering first base is tied together with Juan Soto's single and Ryan Zimmerman's bloop single. And those things are 5 years apart and have nothing else connected, except for the fact that it feels like it's just a cruel fate that the baseball world and the baseball gods have sent to Milwaukee and sent to the stadium and sent to the city, because that game three was where it was supposed to start turning. It was where it was supposed to. I mean, for how many years, how many playoff runs have Brewers fans cried for? Well, can just someone random step up? Someone just like, let's give us that moment. And you got the moment in game two, but that didn't assure you a series win, which is really what matters here, is winning a series. I think that changes the whole dynamic of the feel around it. Like, game two is still great and takes a little of the sting away from, not the sting away, but a little of like the, it's maybe less of a failure in this series now, because you did have that comeback, but doesn't take the sting away. But game three was supposed to be the moment that propelled this team on, at least to the next series, maybe further. Mm-hmm. Jake Bowers, pinch hit. Tobias Myers, 5 shutout. Sal Frelick. JR, the stadium was shaking. I don't know if you've ever been in a stadium as loud as that one was, but I haven't.
I maybe in 2008, maybe. And I'm not sure of that. That's clouded with memory. But that was the most alive crowd I can remember. And what's better for vibes than a crowd that is as into it as any crowd you've ever seen? You have the back-to-back home runs. I mean, what the Mets are doing right now, I think, is being attributed to just like playing meaningful baseball down the stretch and that doubleheader before, you know, but this would have been that for the Brewers. They would have gone down 1-0, been the first team in this modern format to come back from that. And I mean, I absolutely think they would have done what New York did on day one against Philly, like hang on for dear life against Zach Wheeler and then win in the end. Like that, it really felt like, as I was sitting there in the eighth, maybe after the home runs, you know, it's like, we talk so much about vibes, but this really feels like the start of something. This really mm-hmm. feels like something turned in their it favor. Turned.
Yeah. And that's what's so cruel, I think, for the fans, the listeners of the pod, the faithful sickos that tune into this every Monday morning or Thursday morning when we do a surprise emergency pod after Garrett Mitchell hits a big homer, is like, let's peel back the curtain a little bit. Thursday night was really difficult in a lot of different ways. like from our standpoint. Trying to make sense of like the whiplash of that loss was one thing. The emotions of the clubhouse. You saw Christian Yelich's interview with Bob Uecker. Like, so that's on another like a humanity level right there of like just seeing a bunch of grown men cry and talk to them, you know, in the state that they're in. And then there's also this feeling of like, we as reporters, our jobs is to be objective. It's not, you know, we don't root for the teams we cover. But we cover the teams for the fans. It's like that's why we have jobs, is because people care a lot about this team and other teams too, but specifically this one. Like the people in Milwaukee really, really, really want a winner from this team. And so you could just feel the despair, like just the crushing nature of that ninth inning, what that did to fans in this instance. That was different than the Freddie Freeman homer. That was different than Corbin Burns collapsing the second time through the order last year. Well, it was maybe a little, I think maybe a little different than the Soto play. Maybe like this does feel like it was a little more crushing. I don't know if you would agree, but
I do, because they were not supposed, they were the lesser team in 2019. Washington right. had a much better record than Milwaukee.
And it wasn't at home. And there was not that ultimate high of the South Freelick homer. I mean, the Bowers homer was great too, but the South Freelick homer was really where like the roof was blown off the place. Sorry, Mark, you're gonna have to pay for another one. And also in 2019, there was not the history of playoff, I don't want to call it chokes, but playoff disappointments.
No, they had just come off of an amazing year. 2018 was objectively a success. So like 2019 was icing on the cake, right? They went backwards a little bit.
It probably was like, it burned a lot probably. People probably woke up the next day feeling like they did on Friday after game three, but just like trying to understand that emotion and convey that in writing, it like an extreme challenge. I hope we did a good job with it. But I was talking to Todd about this too. Like we were on the phone the next day, like, man, I have not felt like that, you know, like even last year's playoff exit driving home, felt nothing like that drive home on Thursday. It was like an odd melancholy, like shock, and sort of like a like an empathetic feeling for how sad a lot of people that we know and these listeners are. Like, I don't know. I don't even know where I'm going with this, but man, just brutal.
Yeah, I mean, it should be pointed out, this is not unique to Milwaukee. Minnesota lost 18 consecutive playoff games. Minnesota, a market obviously very similar to Milwaukee, has had their struggles as well. Teams like Seattle, even San Diego, they've never won a World Series.
Sure.
They've been, you know, San Diego's been there. There are other franchises that have suffered. But, you know, as this compiles, it's easy to see why it starts to feel unique. You know, 2-11 in your last 13 playoff games, like, what's that about? And I think, you know, going back to Devin Williams, like their all-star superstar closer, Josh Hader in 2019 and 2021 and Devin Williams in 2024. I mean, the whole point is to get the game in their hands. And they're the ones who end up with the losses that get you eliminated. Yeah, it went perfectly.
Outside of a couple more hits with runners in scoring position. I mean, the Mets are playing baseball too. Like they can make pitches too. It went perfectly.
And it wasn't
Nick Mears. Excuse me? Like, Freddy Peralta came out of... I love the Cespedes barbecue tweet in the eighth inning that Pat Murphy was going full college coach regional. Oh, you pitched 2 days ago? Get out there for the eighth.
And I mean, Devin's pitch to Pete Alonso is a really good pitch. He just hit it. Well, okay, it wasn't the best... It wasn't the best airbender we've ever seen, but it's off the plate, you know.
In so much that it was a Devin Williams airbender. I mean, we could get into the tipping pitches thing, but I don't really think that's going to assuage anyone's pains or really do anything for us right now. So
I also maybe don't. I don't buy it. I don't buy it, Kurt. It's so subtle. I don't buy it. I mean, I feel like every time somebody gets lit up, it's they're tipping pitches. Here's how, you know.
I agree with you, but like baseball players notice these things. I'm sure they do.
They're studying film.
And so the subtlety of it, I'm watching it. I'm like, oh yeah, you could argue he was tipping pitches for sure, but like, what, do they see it? But yeah, I think they do see it a lot of the time.
Maybe. I guess my thought is, why didn't anybody hit him sooner? Why did it come down to this? Is this the first time they were like, oh, he's tipping here in game three of the wild card series? You know, we couldn't hit him last night when he clawed through us in 10 pitches. But tonight we got, and I mean, it's good hitters. It's Francisco Lindor. It's Pete Alonso. I get it.
The Nimmo at bat stood out to me because he got him to chase and swing through those two changeups at the bottom of the zone, underneath the zone. And then he goes back to it, which is understandable in that spot, but he just totally missed his spot, left it up. So, and Brandon Nimmo's a good hitter. So that's where it really felt like that inning changed for me. And then once you got behind 3-1 on Pete Alonso, it was like, I don't see a way out of this. Maybe if you throw a good 1-1 pitch to him and he rolls over it, that was the way out.
Double play.
But boy, getting behind 3-1 to Alonso was... He probably needed to throw him a fastball there.
Yeah. I mean, I was definitely worried about it. I didn't think, he's just going to, grate through these three very good hitters. I figured it would be a challenge. I did think when he got the strikeout for the first out, I did think that it was probably...
And then got ahead 0-2 on Nimmo. It was
And they were
this
good
is what
pitches.
Devin Williams does. Yeah. They can't hit his changeup. No.
Right.
Yeah. Which, again, only adds to the magnitude of that swing from Alonso.
Yeah, this stuff doesn't happen in the playoffs. Like, it was historic what he did. And he, opposite field, it barely got out. I mean, I just think it was a good hitter hitting a decent pitch. And that's all there is to it. Like, he's a power hitter. They had not hit a single home run in this series. That was their only home run the entire series. And so, honestly, they're kind of due. You got to expect the Mets are a good team. You got to expect they're going to hit one. It just obviously came at the worst time conceivable against a guy that, you thought was going to be the best of your pitchers on that day and any given day because of how dominant he has been. Kurt, let me tell you why I was pretty forlorn afterwards. It's extremely selfish. It's selfish. I'm not going to lie. Well, first of all, I'm kidding about this, but like it was really tough being in that clubhouse because I said this on the last podcast. I've said this elsewhere, but I don't think people understand how sudden that comes for them too. Like, they pick up their stuff. They leave the locker room. They leave the clubhouse. They're going home to wherever they live. They're not going to see these guys again. There's no, we'll come back for breakfast tomorrow morning, or, we'll get together again on Monday for like the postseason awards banquet. Like, that stuff doesn't happen. At least in 2019, they had a flight home to sort of come to terms with it. This is go back to the locker room, get your things and bye. I mean, you're not going to have the same teammates again. Like, most of these guys will be back, of course, but it's pretty sudden, stark, like farewell tour very quickly. But something was taken from me, Kurt. Something was taken from me too.
Remember what they took from you.
Remember what they took from me. September 24th, I believe, is the date of this podcast. I want to play just a little bit of audio. It's a little over a minute, maybe almost two. Here's what I had to say. Sal Frelick is going to hit a home run in the postseason. That's my irrational take.
That's your irrational take.
That's my, I had a vision and I have this belief that has no basis in reality. I just feel it. I feel it. He homered twice in like three games and hasn't homered before or since.
I was just trying to rack my brain to like match that. You know, that your irrational playoff take that I firmly believe. And you know what? There's nothing. You have done it.
May 14th, May 15th, back-to-back days, both against Pittsburgh, Sal Frelick hit home runs in both games. He has not homered since.
I love baseball.
His RBI? He does not have 30 RBIs this season. Oh, how is that possible?
No, he got one. He got one today. He's up to
30. He got one today. That's right. He has hit 30. It took 465 at bats to get there.
It was a hard hit ball too.
Arrow's pointing up on Sal Frelick. Arrow's pointing up.
I am not giving up on Sal Frelick showing up to camp stronger and with more bat speed next year. And suddenly you're like, yes, he's hitting 10 homers. Get ready for it.
I think that's right. They believe in him very strongly, and I do trust their judgment on that front. So, I think I'm ready. He's going to hit a postseason home run. And when he does, I might faint. I might never predict anything again. That's going to be the win for me. Kurt, I can't believe
I took that from you.
Would they build me a statue if that had stood? If the 2-0 score,
They would have built Sal Frelick a statue. And in doing so, you would have also been by association commemorated forever.
Yeah. Here's what I will settle for.
We could have built you a statue.
I will settle for a statue of Sal, and then my words, all 1 minute and 45 seconds of that.
Oh, yeah.
Inscribed.
It's like, yeah.
Gettysburg Address.
Yeah. It's like the Kurt Gibson homer. You know, you associate some moments with calls. And instead of the broadcast call, it would be a micro booth.
The words JR said on some podcast. That's it. Including the part where I say, oh, he's only got 30 RBIs. What's wrong with this guy? Including all of it. Oh, man, Kurt. That was, you know.
You grabbed my arm.
I grabbed your arm when that ball. Because of course, that's a no doubter. It was gone immediately.
Yeah. With the trajectory to it was like, oh, that's majestic.
Yeah. I grabbed your arm.
Oh, it was like it kind of turned into like a college bench, like basketball bench, like hold me back moment. That was we've talked about the high moments of seasons.
That was it.
2018 was Jesus Aguilar walking off the field in game two, taking the ovation from Wade Miley. That was it.
Never had one of those in 2020, interestingly enough.
No, there's just no good moments.
When I cover a game, I feel like I compartmentalize really well. I don't even experience the game like I do elsewhere. But I broke character pretty hard in that moment. I was pretty fired up. I was pretty excited. I was kind of running around the press box a little bit, being a little stupid. Not stupid. It was fine. It was just, I don't think, I'm pretty sure I was beaming ear to ear throughout most of that. But anyway, that's just a footnote now. I am just lost to history, Kurt.
And that's exactly why this was so bad. Sal Frelick, like, let us say it so we can try to continue to wrap our minds around that which cannot be wrapped around. It's like the Holy Trinity. You ain't wrapping your mind around it, so don't try. Sal Frelick hit a home run on the first pitch after Jake Bowers hit a go-ahead home run in a winner-take-all playoff game in the seventh inning. Sal Frelick has the lowest average exit velocity of any regular major league batter this year. That's like 250 batters.
Sal Frelick had not homered since May 15th.
Jake Bowers batted 199, but not to take, we're taking away from Sal Frelick here. Sorry, this is about Sal
Frelick. I mean, it's still fair. It's the unlikeliest back-to-back home runs, I'm going to say, in Brewers history.
You could watch entire, 100%. You could watch entire batting practice rounds of Sal Frelick and not see him put one in the seats. And then
every time he came to the plate, I was like, does it count if it's a sharp single up the middle? Does it count if he hits it to where the outfielder is standing right now? Mind you, they play very shallow for Sal Frelick. Does that count? Can I count it? That's what I was saying throughout the first two and a half games. I wanted that really bad. I believed it. I believed it. Yeah.
Yeah. The place was literally shaking. As an aside, are we having Sal Frelick discourse now? Because we're going to spend maybe we'll save this for deeper in the off season.
No,
there will be Sal Frelick thoughts. Like this guy, when he starts swing the bat harder, it's not a power hitter, but he's a better hitter when he does that. And there's a little bit of power in there, not necessarily homers all the time, but there's a little power in there. And we saw it down the stretch a little bit.
He put the ball in the air a lot. He was hitting a lot of line drives toward the end of the season. He was kind of locked in. Here's how I want to talk about him, because it plays into a larger question I have. One of the things I think that if you wanted to come up, going back to that question of like connective tissue between the struggles that the Brewers have had, one of the things is they don't produce bats out of this organization. That is a longstanding problem. It won't get solved in 1 year. Maybe with the 2023 draft class, it actually will, although that's mostly pitchers, but still, you know, that leaves them short of capital to trade. It leaves them short of like bona fide hitters that they didn't have to go get. And with a team that doesn't want to spend, we don't need to argue whether or not they should or can, or what the market means or whatever. Like they don't spend. they have to use what little money they do spend on guys to supplement their offense because they don't produce offensive players. There's Ryan Braun, Jonathan Lucroy, and then you got to start talking about like Lorenzo Cain, who obviously spent the bulk of his career not here.
Doesn't count.
Matt LaPorta, who is traded for a really good player, I guess. I mean, he was developed. He was good. He became something for the Brewers. I don't know.
Orlando Arcia.
This year, Orlando Arcia, Alcides Escobar, like, a lot of glove. Heston. There's some glove in there. Our prince. Here's what I want to say, though. By the end of the year, we almost got to a point where I feel like you could argue this is a little bit of a breakthrough year. Obviously, there's Jackson Chourio. We tend to not count him when we talk about the development of the organization because he was such a, you know, once-in-a-lifetime shooting star. Like, he didn't even spend much time in the organization. But he's here. You know, Sal Frelick had a strong finish and produced in the postseason a really big moment, and he's a really great defensive player. He's doing all of this with like a busted hip too, which is amazing. Bryce Terang, I don't know how to assess his season other than what it is. Great defensively, not good offensively, but for a while it was good offensively. And he obviously had a very good series as well. And Garrett Mitchell, who when he was healthy, I think just straight up had a pretty good year, is a very good defensive player, has some things to work on, also produced a major moment in the postseason. Four guys, four offensive players from your organization. So I feel like it's way too strong to say this was a breakthrough season. I feel like they're still very, very lacking in this department. And I don't think there are a ton of obvious guys who are about to hit the surface that, you know, will change course for the Milwaukee Brewers. But this was a pretty big success, I think, for their farm system to have this series at the very least. I don't know. How do you, I'm rambling a little. How do you feel about all this?
Yeah, it's interesting because like Orlando Arcia was probably the best player that they developed between starting in, I don't know, 2013 through Jackson Church, Tyrone Taylor, maybe in that category too. But Orlando Arcia did. The funny thing about that is Arcia did have the playoff moments. So you can't really say like the playoff lack of success is due to, well, I guess the guys they have.
Oh, you're right.
They probably could have used some more guys over the course of these years, no doubt. Like, no denying that it has not been great. But, the corner has been turned with these guys. Sure, like, Chourio is great because he's Jackson Chourio, not necessarily, like, a ton of what the Brewers did or didn't do. But you have to give them credit, though, for the investment that they've made in that side of, you know, that side of player development, the international scouting and et cetera. Like, this was their first real breakthrough in that area, and now they've carried that forward. So that's a positive sign for the organization, no doubt. Like, they seem to be doing really good things down there. They have other teams asking them, how do you do it? And I doubt they give them a good answer. But this year, probably, if you look at it, was a positive breakthrough on the hitting development side. That said, like, I don't know what Bryce Terang's ceiling really is. 95 WRC plus. Maybe he could be league average. But again, that's still a really, really good player. We're going to need to see a lot more out of Joey Ortiz. I mean, he'll give you great value at shortstop. Like, he's going to be an incredible defensive shortstop, so that helps soften some of the blow if you don't hit, but gonna need to see more from him. But yeah, Garrett Mitchell's kind of the interesting one there, because there's a lot of reasons to, and a lot of different like ways to look at him and come out kind of unimpressed. The strikeout rate, mm-hmm. if you look at the analytics and the numbers, probably not the best player, not the sexiest player. You look at the scouting, not the sexiest player, but he just produces, man. He crushes. He can't hit fastballs in a certain spot, but he crushes a lot of other pitches, and he's got this upside. And good player. If he can stay healthy, that is. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's kind of where the Brewers
were
at. That was the biggest question coming into this year about the Brewers, probably, is like, if they take a step forward in this area, it's a positive year.
Well, I think it does answer it. The question is answered as the Brewers aren't good at that, and it's killing them. Like, they just never seem to have a complete team, right? One year they've got the great pitching, like in 2021, and no offense. Offense just completely lets them down. 1 year, you know, 2018, they have a really good offense. They got an MVP player in the middle of their lineup, and maybe they will again when Jackson Chourio is, you know, well, next year for all that, for that matter. But they didn't really have any pitching. They had to kind of piece it together. They had to do openers and bait and switches and one innings from Gio Gonzalez. Like they had to patch it together. This year, I would argue there were a lot of things that, you know, their starters and their offense wasn't great. Their defense was, but I don't think those four guys, I mean, Chourio, we'd have to set aside. I don't think those other three guys are going to be special offensive players. I think they're going to be great role players. They'll fit in. They'll be good. But they got to start producing dudes. And I don't mean Chourio dudes. That's another level. Congratulations. That's one of the things, you know, very few teams are going to have that.
Yeah, but they do have that now. Like, they do have a guy you can look at and say, yeah, he could be a 5-win player next year. That's a pretty big deal. That's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. And maybe that is the difference, but like, it, you know, they haven't been able to do that. And I feel like there are tendrils of that, you know, the money that they've had to spend elsewhere. They've had to go get Rhys Hoskins on a 2-year deal. And granted, we love that signing. I still think in the moment it made perfect sense, but that's holding them back a little bit. They do not have a third baseman next year.
No, their position, I don't want to call it inability, but the weaknesses in the hitting position player development side have left them to scour for position players in various areas. Not only just bargains, but like Rhys Hoskins, Jackie Brad, like it just hasn't worked out for the most part. And that kind of leaves it leaves you in a spot where the offense was good this year, but it does put you in a tougher position. I don't know where this is coming from. This is sort of just a sense. I do feel like there's a trade coming, this like some sort of notable significant acquisition on the offense coming this offseason.
You think?
And I don't have any, this is just sort of just taking a guess and how it feels going into this offseason. But that is what I think. If I haven't looked at their payroll yet for, you know, the exact number to, you know, going into next year, Willy Adames will be coming off the books. They won't tender a lot of free agents, but you know, there should be money in there to spend. The difficulty, as we've seen, and I don't think like this is talked about enough in the baseball circles, is like spending correctly, spending wisely. And again, like, that's difficult to differentiate, right? Because Rhys Hoskins was, I would argue, wise spending. It was a spot that you absolutely needed, a guy who's performed at a very high level on offense throughout his career, and it just didn't work out. So,
At the beginning of the season,
I think something's coming.
When at the beginning of the season, we said worst case scenario, he's terrible, and he comes back for the second year, not great, but there is a chance he is better 1 year fully removed from that
healthy,
ACL surgery.
Sure.
So there's a chance it works out, and he still had 26 homers, which isn't good enough coupled with everything
else. He is like 18 months removed from the surgery by now, but a full off season after being a year plus removed. I get it. And look, you can do a lot worse than Rhys Hoskins at first base. We expected him to do something in the playoffs, and boy, oh boy, could we not have been any more wrong about that? I think it was sort of like a... It was sort of like, well, you know, they're in first place. This is fine. It could be worse. You know, like, this guy hits in the playoffs. No, that's not how it ended up. He was quite bad and looked really slow this year. But we said the same things about Jesse Winker. And, Jesse Winker. Whoops.
Yes. Rhys Hoskins, 0-9 in the series. The best thing he did was get hit by a pitch with the bases loaded that drove in a run. His lineup spot was also where Jake Bowers, of course, hit that home run in game 3. Jesse Winker, maybe the template. Like, sometimes these guys just get better the next year, even as they get a year older. I mean, if Rhys Hoskins does what Jesse Winker did this year, I think you'll be okay with it, but it's, you know, that's still not like what you're paying for exactly. Cause Jesse Winker was a pretty good bargain on top of everything that he did for the Nationals and then the Mets this season. Let's talk about Winker just a little bit. What in the world? Like, that guy, now I don't want to be too harsh to him because people were booing him viciously in this series. They booed him last year when he was on the Brewers. I think we all understand what happened. He wasn't healthy, and I don't know why he couldn't just say in the postseason, I'm not healthy. You don't want me on this roster. I don't know if it's in any player's nature to do that. So like, I don't know what he could have done that really quite merited that reaction, but also, man, he seems to really have it out for the Brewers.
Yeah. I mean that, I think when Frankie Montas hit him in the backside in the final week of the weekend of the regular season, I think that really burned him.
What was that really for? I still don't know. Was there some jawing earlier in the year?
Well, Wink, yeah, with the Nationals. Winker had hit a double or a homer or something, maybe in the same game. And there was some jawing from him. And that's not a surprise. Like, you kind of, if you read between Willy Adames's, or no, Christian Yelich's comments on the broadcast during game one, it was like, you know the players, I'll let you guys figure that out. Like, Jesse Winker can run a little bit hot. He did a pretty good job in his time in Milwaukee of like working hard to be a good teammate and not be kind of like a jack wagon, for lack of a better term. You could see he made a really, really conscious effort early in his time with Milwaukee. And like, for the most part, a lot of players didn't mind him. They, you know, there's some endearing parts of that as a teammate, the Wink Show, as they call it, but he can run a little hot and maybe a little more than a little hot. And yeah, I would hold that against me if I was booed in the playoffs and then booed in July and then booed in playoffs the next year and pre-games and when I came up to bat. I would run a little hot too. I can get it. The thing with Adames was weird. It was like I did not understand what he was going for, that what Winker was going for there. He was kind of just barking to bark. But then again, sometimes that's what happens when you feel slighted and probably have been slighted and then come through and absolutely slam it to your former team.
Yeah, I think Winker was just talking to the nearest person in a Brewers uniform. Honestly, I really don't think that I can't imagine it was anything personal. What do I know? I'll be honest. I'm not giving him a whole lot of thought the rest of the way here.
Well, it was personal. Maybe not towards Adames, but to the Brewers.
Yeah, for sure. It was personal for Jesse Winker. Like, I'm sure he was like, you guys all hated me. I was just hurt. And now I'm back and I'm going on and you're not. So going back to this trade you just mentioned.
Okay, that's enough Jesse Winker time. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm done with him. Great hair. Congratulations. But you're not going to be the reason the Mets go on. I am interested in that only because I want to know what the Brewers have to give at this point. Now, they do have a farm system that, I know we're fond of the farm system. It's not a top 10 farm system anymore. It's not, depending on who you ask. And so there might be some guys that they're so loath to trade from that. Devin Williams is certainly a name that we expect will at least be discussed this offseason. Todd didn't think they'd find the value for him and ultimately bring him back and see what happens at the trade deadline, which is a scenario I do think is plausible. Who else? What are the other chips here? I guess Rhys Hoskins, if you know, he's back for, I don't know if that contract is going to be super enticing to other teams, but maybe, who else would they be in a position to move at this point?
Isn't being a Brewers fan awesome? You get your shins kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
You get other things kicked in and then you get to listen to a couple of slaps on a podcast. Guess which players are going to be gone next year? Isn't that existence? But it is the existence, and I think it's fair to bring it up, and we should bring it up. I think Devin Williams will still be gone. Maybe I don't think one bad outing tanks his value that much.
Oh no, of course not. No.
Now, ultimately, like, will the return for 1 year? I'm going to say this: if they trade Devin Williams, prepare to be underwhelmed with the return. For 1 year,
right, that's what I'm saying.
In the offseason, when there's a lot of relievers available, I would curb my enthusiasm a little bit. I would curb my enthusiasm a lot of it. So maybe in that regard, he would be back, but I still get the sense that they will move on from him. I think he's got like a $10.5 million option in his contract for this year. And it's not necessarily like hater money for the last year of a relievers deal, but that's still pretty pricey for a ninth inning pitcher. And they've obviously got a cavalcade of arms that they trust in the back end of the bullpen. So I'm still going to pick Devin Williams. Guess he probably gets moved, probably came close to getting moved last year too. So There's that. We'll see about like Aaron Savali is an interesting name. He's on the hook for about $8 million. I would venture to guess the Brewers tender him. Don't know that you can get a ton for him, but then again, you know, they packaged Adrian Hauser in a deal last year, moved him to New York. They could carry Aaron Savali, but it feels like $8 million for Savali is a little much for a guy that they didn't feel good enough to pitch as a start. Like he was their number four starter in the rotation in the playoffs. So not like as not viewed incredibly highly, high enough, but not incredibly highly in just the valuation of him. So $8 million is it's not a ton, but this is the Brewers and $8 million kind of is a ton when you've got a bunch of other options that you could start.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask about. The options. There are a lot. I don't know if any of them leads you to a sexy sounding rotation without adding somebody that we don't know about.
But this is exactly the Brewers' plan and approach is, yeah, okay, we'll trade Adrian Hauser. Might leave us like supposedly an arm short. But here comes Tobias Myers. Here comes, insert name here, Logan Henderson. Chad Patrick. Maybe. I don't think they protect him this offseason.
It's
but,
just such a crowded 40-man roster. Like, Chad Patrick was awesome at AAA. But such a crowded 40-man roster between the guys coming off and the guys coming on. And I know we've said 40-man rosters can be manipulated and figured out. But, like...
But not in the offseason so much. Not so much in the offseason, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. They're going to have to make some tough calls. There are going to be some pretty good minor leaguers who are left off the 40-man roster who need to be added to be protected from the Rule 5 draft. I think they'll probably lose a guy in the Rule 5 draft at this rate. So it's tough. You know, Brandon Woodruff is such a wild card with that shoulder issue. You never know how a guy's going to bounce back. We saw Aaron Ashby
take
forever. And if he's able to be a starter, they'll be in great shape. But what can you realistically expect? And you know, will they have Robert Gasser by the end of the year? He probably wouldn't be a starter. He'd be a reliever. Jacob Mizorowski figures in here somewhere, but as a starter or reliever, I don't know. Like they're
Logan Henderson.
They're going to have arms. Oh, Logan maybe Henderson, Carlos, of course.
Maybe Carlos Rodriguez is ready. The Brewers will figure it out on pitching. The Brewers will always figure it out on pitching. Colin Ray, that option probably gets picked up. Although I would not be shocked if they didn't pick it up.
Picked it up and left him.
Sure. Yeah. He just faded a lot at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is the biggest thing you're watching this offseason? What is the one question, the one position, the one whatever that you really think is truly fascinating?
Third base.
Yeah, that's what I think too.
I mean, unless you move Sal Frelick there actually this time. I think you want to do something there. Like you can squint and see Oliver Dunn there. You can squint and see, well, Brock Wilkins like waiting, but his year was sort of a wash. Like if you talk to Brewers people, you know, like it was difficult to evaluate after he got hit in the face. So he's still a ways away, even though he's relatively close, you know, he spent all year at AA, but he's still a ways away from being a big leaguer. So like, it just seems like, and then again, they went out and signed Rhys Hoskins at a spot of need at first base, and it backfired to a pretty hefty degree. So maybe I'm talking out of my rear end here, but like, maybe don't go into this next year with a classic Brewers platoon at third base. Like, let's go for something else besides like Oliver Dunn plus Andrew Monasterio. Let's see what's out there. And this is where you advocated for Matt Chapman in the offseason, JR. But that was did not happen.
That one hurts. Maybe it
could have happened. It was not going to happen, but it could have happened in a different world.
I wonder if he even wanted to come here. I mean, that's the thing is you look at the offseason and the guys that are available and you go back and you say, well, who could the Brewers have signed that would have helped this team? And there's really only one, two, maybe three names that match up with fit and production where it's like, that would have been a huge upgrade.
It's a tricky.
And then those guys have to want to come to Milwaukee, right? Like Matt Chapman might have just had eyes on San Francisco.
It's a tricky game that the Brewers play because they're not often at the top of the market. And then how many times are like if you go out and get Jamer Candelario this offseason, that's a mistake. That would have been bad.
Yeah.
So
And like, I would have advocated for it. There's several guys.
Nah, I would have said, don't get Candelario. Don't do that. But like that's how I feel about a lot of that mid-tier of free agents. It's like, do you really like the kind of guys that the Pirates often swim in? I don't know. I don't know about that, guys.
Right.
I don't know.
You know, we talk so much about first base, about, oh, they haven't had one since Prince Fielder, which, first of all, is Eric Thames erasure and Jesus Aguilar erasure. Granted, they haven't sustained
one half, career, but one half of years. Jesus Aguilar. Sure, sure.
One half of Jesus Aguilar. That's correct.
17 to 18 was good offensive production. Yeah.
When was the last good third baseman this team had? Now, Joey Ortiz, that's unfair. Gold glove caliber defense. And he had a stretch. He was a really good month.
Yeah.
But like they don't have good third baseman. Just can we just get a corner infielder, please? Who matches?
Travis Shaw was.
Yeah. Yes.
Pretty dang good for 2 years.
He had. Yeah. Was it 2017 where he was just sensational? I mean, he had 1 year where he was sensational.
17. I do think I had this thought too. I think Jorge Ortiz is the best defensive third baseman this team has had since.
I think that's right.
Back before I can like evaluate that. He is really, really good there, and he should be really, really good at shortstop. And like, don't sleep on what you can get from, you know, 2 to 2.5 wins just on defense from a shortstop. That's the kind of value I think he provides. It's like Bryce Turang, but at shortstop. So,
and he'll get better offensively. Like, I believe in his profile more than Bryce Turang's as an offensive player. So, if they found a shortstop on the market to maybe bridge the gap until Brock Wilkin is ready, another year of Joey Ortiz at their base is not going to be the end of the world. In fact, it might be a really good thing. You know, for the first 2 months of the season, Joey Ortiz looked like a revelation, right? So, you know, so I don't want to discount that. I don't want to discount that they have that flexibility. I also wonder if Rhys Hoskins is more of a DH because he can't play the field. Although, again, he made a couple nice plays in the playoffs. And, you know, like it wasn't his fault that the toss to Frankie Montas clanked off his glove. You know, if that's the case, if he's more of a DH than he is a first baseman, Jake Bowers, I think, is kind of a non-tender candidate. So do they go and try and get another first baseman or one that's going to bat a little better than 199, you know? So that's also something that I am curious to watch. I agree with you. The pitching is, it's not set, but they're in good shape. They've got arms. It's definitely about who's going to take those spots in the field.
Yeah. I mean, we've already jumped fully into the offseason picture, so let's stay in the middle of the water and
we don't have to
swim in the sharks. Well, really quick, like the Brewers should still be in a good spot for next year. The Cardinals, in theory, like need either an elite offseason or just like maybe they should. I don't want to say tear it down, but they got to do something. The Cubs are the team that's still the closest because they have some financial might. They have the manager who makes the most money of any manager in baseball. That's got to be a huge difference maker, of course. Surely they'll win the division with that. But the bones of the Cubs organization aren't terrible. They do a pretty decent job of like Brewersing to a degree, like Porter Hodge, guys like that. Pete Crowarmstrong's a good player. That should be better next year. Like, they've got some money to spend. Who knows? Do they get Corbin Burns? Things like that. Like, the Cubs are probably in a decent spot, but feels like the Brewers still like are the kings of this division. And, you know, we'll see how the offseason goes for them. But most of these guys are going to be back next year. They'll have a healthy, theoretically, knock on wood, healthy Christian Yelich and all these sorts of different makers. Even without Willy Adames, I think, well, we'll see how the offseason goes. They never seem to be the favorites, but I think they might be the favorites next year.
Yeah. Sign Alex Bregman is my recommendation, please. Slightly distressed asset. Slightly distressed asset. He's still going to get way more money than Bruce will pay.
Is he a Boris guy?
I don't know. I don't pay attention to the agents. Boris is falling out of favor, so I don't know.
That's true.
Maybe he doesn't sign right away, and he's one of those guys, those Boris guys, who waits till the very end because he didn't get quite the market he wanted. You know, maybe that's an opportunity. Here's one more storyline that I think is interesting, and we talked about it during the game. What is this coaching staff going to look like next year? Because the Cubs fired several coaches in the offseason. Craig Counsell is obviously still manager. He's going to be tight with a lot of the guys from this staff. It's certainly easy to logically connect guys on this staff to the Chicago openings or just in general. I mean, I think actually it's funny, change of manager, and it's kind of an uncommon level of retention from the coaching staff. Usually there's a lot of turnover, and we didn't see hardly any. They added some guys. Pretty much everybody who was here last year, except the manager, was here this year with very rare exceptions. So this year it isn't going to be like that. And how will that impact this team? You know, and here's another one. How long is Pat Murphy going to do this? Are we sure that he's going to be the manager for many more years? Like what's his trajectory, would you say?
Well, I'll start with the second part first, I guess. I mean, like, look, the Brewers do have Ricky Weeks there in a position to eventually, in theory, take over as manager. That is sort of if it all falls, I don't want to say optimally, but if all falls according to how it seemed to line up right now, that's in the future for the Brewers. But Pat Murphy's got a couple years left on his deal. Like the way that year went, it's the ball is fully in his court and got no signs that, you know, he doesn't want to go back out and compete again next year. As for the coaching staff, I would not expect a ton of turnover once again. There's not a whole lot of reason for these coaches who like Murph, who like Milwaukee, who have been here, who like winning, who know the guys on the team. Like there's not a lot of reason for them to want to go elsewhere unless you're getting some sort of promotion. Now there are some guys on this coaching staff that have worked themselves into spots where maybe they could get a promotion or a higher job, and that would probably have to come elsewhere because things are pretty good and pretty set on this Milwaukee coaching staff. Like one name that comes to mind is Quinton Berry for sure. There's manager potential down the road with Quinn Berry. And, you know, it's a great thing going on right now in Milwaukee, and I'm not saying he's going to be gone or hypothesizing one way or the other, but, like, that's a guy that if some better positions open up, he's someone who deserves it, who deserves a look, who deserves to be hired, and you could absolutely see leaving. But as for most of the coaching staff, I don't expect a whole lot of turnover. Like, the Brewers prioritize this sort of continuity, and that's part of what makes them good.
I don't know if people understand how Quinton Berry's role in the running game, you know, I don't know if they understand the scope of it. He's a guy who really worked with these guys on the running game, and that was a huge asset for the Brewers. Second in baseball in stolen bases, just constantly putting pressure on the defense. That's Quinton Berry. He's sensational. He's really good. He's not, you know, I'm sure people realize by this point, first base coaches don't just tell you to go to second or tell you to watch the pickoff move. You know, they obviously have a much greater role, and he's really good. So Walker McKinven is another guy on this staff who I think we've credited in the past with some of the voodoo, some of the alchemy that has helped this Brewers team survive and really get the most out of players that were rejected by other organizations or just, you know, weren't seen as studs. I've decided, Kurt, I think what needs to happen for the Brewers is they just need to be a team that has, like, I don't know, 80 wins with 2 weeks to go and gets hot and then stays hot in the playoffs. Cause if just anecdotally, it feels like that's what you need. You need to not be that good and then and stay good.
I mean, there's, discounting the 2020 World Series, which, as we talked about in the previous podcast, like, I did that, and the player was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Nothing. I didn't say anything."
They can have a World Series. It counts. It's just, yeah,
sure.
It's just
sure. But taking that away, the Dodgers are not in an entirely dissimilar boat to what the Brewers are in. Now, sure, they've won a couple series in there, but from when would you say, like 2014 through 2013 through this year? It is
unquestionably one of the best franchises year in, year out.
It is,
they have one.
It is the same thing where they're just ahead. They're ahead. They're ahead. They're ahead. And then I don't say coast, but like they get to the playoffs. And now the Dodgers at least like have flaws that you can point to every year where it's like, all of your pitching is hurt and you are throwing Ryan Brazier in a start in a decisive winner take all game. Oh, here's Joe Kelly. Better get 9 outs. Like the Brewers don't even have that issue really. So, but again, that just goes back to the whole question of, and I think everyone tries to do this, right? You try to figure out like what is holding the Brewers back. And there's not really, I mean, if there is an answer, it's probably this. They don't have a $200 million payroll. That's probably it. But like, that hasn't prevented them from winning 90 to 95 games a year. So why should it prevent them from winning 10 in the playoffs? You know what I mean? Like one of these times, which again, we don't have answers to, and I don't know if fans really have answers to. I think you can kind of like grab onto things and maybe it makes you feel better to have like an answer, but I'm telling you, I'm sitting right here, JR, and I still don't have an answer. It just feels like, you know, the ball's got to bounce your way one time, and it felt like it was bouncing your way this time. And guess what? It bounced a few feet over the right field picnic area fence off the bat of Pete Alonso.
I'll throw another one your way. The New York Yankees won the World Series in 2009 with CC Sabathia. They've been to the playoffs 11 times since and have not been back to the World Series. Now, I in no way think that anyone should have any sympathy for the New York Yankees organization. They have a million titles, more titles than I'm even going to count. So it's not the same. And in fact, I kind of don't even like comparing the Brewers to any franchise that do have titles, because you know, like the Twins, for example. I mean, is a title in the, you know, 1991, is that something that's satisfying this fan base? Is the fan, you know, the fan base is pretty starved. A lot of the people who cheer for the Twins have no idea what 1991 looked like.
Yeah,
but they're still a fair amount.
I mean, that's one of the tough things to grapple with, like in Brewers world, right? Is so much of like the current day fandom is people who were born after 1982, well after 1982, which, as we've talked about, is part of the reason like I just really don't, it just doesn't do it right for me. But like, so on one hand, you want to view this run as the most successful run of baseball in Brewers history, which is absolutely true. This is the most successful run of baseball they have ever had. Sure, they get a little benefit from the current playoff environment that wasn't the same in 1977, but whatever. Like, they're winning 90 games a year. That they've have not come close to doing that ever, and they should be commended for that. And this is Pat Murphy, sort of, that this was his answer when I asked him after the game, like, how do you put it into words, like the feeling about losing five straight times in the playoffs right away? And he said they should be commended for making the playoffs every year in that time. And while I agree with that, like, absolutely, they should be commended for this. A bunch of other organizations, I don't want to say would die for this, but they sure want it. They sure want to have a chance every postseason. It's gotten to the point where, like, this is what a generation of Brewers fans, I think, have come to expect. It's honestly not that different than the expectation to win for, like, the Yankees. It really is not. If you care about the Brewers, if you follow the Brewers, your expectations are to win the division. And when that comes around, your expectations don't change in October just because you can't win in years past. You expect one of these years to do something, and they can't. They have not been able to. So it just creates this weird dichotomy of like, yeah, absolutely commendable for being one of the best run organizations year in, year out, that wins 90 plus games. And that should not be washed over. Like, that's really hard to do when you give your fans 6 months of fun and good times on a nightly basis in the summer. But how do you marry the two? I don't know. Cause people want more.
Also,
and they should.
They should. Yeah. I think it's completely understandable that people would look at 2024 and say that was a waste of time. I don't think that's necessarily correct. In fact, I think we could look back and find that the building blocks were in place for a late season October run here in the next couple of years. But, you know, I also know this, the Brewers, the most wins they've ever had in franchise history is 96. That of course happened most recently in 2018. 96 wins, the best ever showing by the Milwaukee Brewers, would never be the best record in any postseason I only went back, looked through the wild, since the introduction of the wild card, but I'm sure it's pretty significant throughout the course of history. The fewer teams making it before that. There was one time, I think in 2014, it would have been just one team ranked ahead of them, but in every other year, maybe 2016 too, in every other year, there's multiple teams ranked ahead of you. Six teams would have been ranked ahead of you in 2019. Again, that's what the best win total the Brewers have ever had. They've never been a behemoth. They have always been a team that has been good enough to scrape in, but not a team that you should realistically expect to get to the World Series. And I'm not calling that making it sound like a success. I'm saying they've had bites of the apple. At some point, they have to get the whole apple. Like, at some point, they have to really build a team that's going to compete for a World Series and not a team that's just going to scrape in, be good enough, and maybe get hot. It doesn't mean that they're going to actually win a World Series if they do that, but it sure would be nice to just see it, see it with your own eyes. Because every other franchise in baseball has had a year greater than 96 wins, except for the Marlins and the Rockies. And they have 25 years less history than the Milwaukee Brewers do. They're the only two teams out there that have their best season is less than 96 wins. So at some point, the Brewers need to invest in having a real team, right?
Like, devil's advocate here. You win 98 games. Great. You're in the exact same position. Well, maybe you get the ball.
Well, that's true. Of course.
You're in the exact same position you are now. And you need to perform when the lights are on. And I don't know what the magic recipe is for that. Like, the Dodgers have all the guys, and they, quite frankly, never perform when the lights are on. Now, maybe this year will be different, and they're doing the bites of the apple thing too. And this is the thing about it. Like, the bites of the apple is absolutely sound theory.
Yes, it's correct.
And it is just going to be a dagger to the Milwaukee Brewers if the architect of the bites of the apple theory takes one bite in a different apple, perhaps a big apple.
Big apple.
And hoist a trophy at the end of it. That would be a particular, like, the Mets had won today. I think the vibe of me saying that on this podcast would be a lot different than if it was 1-1 going back to New York like it is, but.
Nick Castellanos.
Which, this all ultimately gets me back to this. The existence that the Milwaukee Brewers live in would be yearned for, is desired by dozens of other teams in baseball in the current day. But that doesn't make this any easier for the Brewers or their fans now. And what the existence that they live feels like, it's cruel.
Yes, it does. It does. I mean, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? Sit here and say, "Oh, you guys are sad. You won 93 games again. You had 6 months of fun." Like, that's absolutely true. It was a great year for the Brewers. But that doesn't take away the lifeless energy in the ballpark, in the concourses, as we were walking to the elevator to go down to the press conference, just like feeling the despair from the silence.
The Bucks won a title when they were the 3 seed. Many times they've been the first overall seed, best record in the NBA, and it hasn't worked out. The Packers won a Super Bowl when they were the bottom seed in the NFC. They came back the next year as the unquestioned number 1 seed and didn't make it out. They just, Kurt, it's going to have to be an 87-win Brewers team that gets hot at the end of the year, because I don't think there's any other formula other than...
They've tried it all.
They've tried everything else. That's it. They've tried everything else.
You could do the super team thing for a year. That'd be kind of fun.
Like the Padres?
Like the Padres.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, it worked out for the Padres. I mean, yes, they overspent. It collapsed on them, and then they got amazing pieces for Juan Soto and wound up right back in the same spot. And quite honestly, look amazing. They look like a team that could win the World Series so easily.
AJ Preller's good at this. Handsome guy. He's good at this.
He is. Kurt, I have nothing else to say. What do you want to say?
I think we got it. I think we left it all out on the field.
We did. We left it all on the field. We're going to have to come back.
I've got some brisket to go eat.
Leftover brisket. So good. Yum, 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 yum. We are going to come back. We're going to we're going to talk about this offseason. We could talk about our predictions. We can go back to our preseason predictions. That's still something that has to happen. We could talk about the farm system, some of the guys that we think are going to make an impact next year. There's a couple names that I can think of that we've said a few times that will probably be discussed. We can also obviously have pods as news happens, as moves are made. Maybe we can do something here during the World Series as a next possible entryway into the Microbrew podcast universe. But for now, Kurt, I think we're going to leave the people. We're going to leave them and let them marinate in some offseason / postseason baseball that is not the Brewers and see what happens from there. Sound good to you?
I think it does. I think that sounds great.
Fantastic. Kurt, thank you for joining me. Thank you, listeners, for joining us as well on this episode of the Microbrew Podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. He's Kurt Hoag. We'll be back in touch with you very soon. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.